This is in the news for December 17th, 2005. I'm Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. First story today is from the Common Dreams Progressive Newswire at www.commondreams.org. It is a press release from Human Rights Watch dated December 16th. Landmark torture ban undercut. Congress would allow evidence obtained by torture. This is out of Washington, D.C. Even as the U.S. Congress has passed a prohibition against the use of torture and cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment, it is set to adopt legislation that would strip the judiciary's ability to enforce the ban, Human Rights Watch warned today. After months of opposition, President Bush yesterday accepted Senator John McCain's amendment banning the use of cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment by U.S. personnel anywhere in the world and prohibiting U.S. military interrogators from using interrogation techniques not listed in the U.S. Army Field Manual on Intelligence Interrogation. But the legislation containing the McCain Amendment currently includes another provision, the Graham-Levin Amendment, that would deny the 500-some detainees in Guantanamo Bay the ability to bring legal action seeking relief from the use of torture or cruel and inhumane treatment. And it implicitly authorizes the Department of Defense to consider evidence obtained through torture or other inhumane treatment in assessing the status of detainees held in Guantanamo Bay. If passed into law, this would be the first time in American history that Congress has effectively permitted the use of evidence obtained through torture. Tom Malinowski, Washington Advocacy Director for Human Rights Watch, said, quote, "With the McCain Amendment, Congress has clearly said that anyone who authorizes or engages in cruel techniques like waterboarding is violating the law. But the Graham-Levin Amendment leaves Guantanamo detainees no legal recourse if they are, in fact, tortured or mistreated. The treatment of Guantanamo Bay detainees will be shrouded in secrecy, placing detainees at risk for future abuse," end quote. These provisions have been added by House and Senate conferees to language that originally passed the Senate as part of the defense authorization legislation. The language in the original Senate version already placed new and significant restrictions on Guantanamo Bay detainees' access to federal court, eliminated the right for detainees to bring habeas corpus claims challenging the legality of their ongoing detention and asserting their innocence. Instead, detainees would be allowed to seek independent court review of their detention at just two points in time, after their initial designation as an enemy combatant by a combatant status review tribunal, and after a conviction by a military commission, and it would be allowed to raise only a very narrow set of claims. They could challenge the procedures and constitutionality of the tribunals and commissions, but would be precluded from seeking an independent review of the factual basis for their detention or conviction. Again, that is from Human Rights Watch, taken from Common Dreams Progressive Newswire at www.commondreams.org. You can call Human Rights Watch at 202-612-4321. Next up, global warming issues. From The Guardian, United Kingdom, at www.guardian.co.uk. Polar bears living on thin ice after record temperatures. This is written by John Vidal, environmental editor for The Guardian. This could be the hottest year ever recorded, posing a threat to Arctic wildlife, including polar bears, ice-dwelling seals, and several forms of vegetation, according to UN scientists collating data from across the world. With 15 days left and information only received until the end of November, this year is certain to be one of the four hottest, with temperatures 0.5 degrees centigrade warmer than average. Michael Giraud, Secretary General of the UN's World Meteorological Organization, which yesterday released its annual review of weather data in Geneva, said, quote, "This year is currently the second warmest on record and could end up being the warmest once all the figures are in. It has certainly been exceptional in the intensity of its storms," end quote. "The year broke many weather records," said the WMO. "Not only was the northern hemisphere hotter overall than in any year since the start of data collection in 1861, but both October and June 2005 are globally the warmest recorded. Sea surface temperatures in the North Atlantic are also expected to be the warmest ever. A pattern of intense droughts and heat waves, followed by major floods and storms, was recorded throughout Africa, Australia, Brazil, China, and the U.S., the report said. Severe heat scorched much of southern Europe and North Africa. In Algeria, temperatures rose as high as 50 degrees centigrade. The heat was offset by extremely cold temperatures, which affected much of the Balkans in February. In Morocco, a cold wave in January pushed temperatures as low as negative 14 degrees centigrade. The WMO expected the southern hemisphere to have its fourth warmest year ever recorded, Australia experienced the hottest temperatures since records began in 1861. It was also the worst year recorded for hurricanes and tropical storms, which depend for their formation on high sea temperatures. Of 26 tropical storms, 14 reached the intensity of hurricanes. Previously, the highest number of tropical storms was 21 in 1933, the WMO said. Hurricane Wilma, which hit Florida in October, was confirmed as the strongest hurricane ever recorded. You can get more on this from John Vidal, the environmental editor of The Guardian in the UK, at www.guardian.co.uk. And now to Ethiopia. Article written by David Blair in Addis Ababa. This is from The Telegraph in the UK at www.telegraph.co.uk. Protesters killed and 40,000 jailed as Blair's friend quells, quote-unquote, insurrection. A leader handpicked by Tony Blair to champion Africa has smashed his opponents with the biggest crackdown in the continent's recent history, jailing 40,000 people, including boys of 15. Meles Zenawi, the Ethiopian Prime Minister and a member of Britain's Commission for Africa, has launched a systematic onslaught against every possible adversary. The entire leadership of Ethiopia's main opposition party has been locked up. Mr. Meles has closed 5 newspapers and jailed their editors, while police have killed about 80 demonstrators. Paramilitary units have killed people arbitrarily, and thousands have been detained at random. The operation had thwarted an quote-unquote insurrection, Mr. Meles said. A crackdown on this scale has not been seen in Africa for 20 years, and the repression exceeds anything by President Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe for the past decade at least. Apartheid-era South Africa's onslaught against the black townships in the 1980s provides the only recent comparison. Ethiopia sank into crisis after a general election in May. The opposition said the polls are rigged and called mass protests in the capital, Addis Ababa. Demonstrators gathered in huge numbers in June and again last month. On both occasions, the security forces opened fire with live rounds. A handful of protesters were armed and shot at police, but most were unarmed, and Western diplomats dismissed Mr. Meles' claim that a violent revolution was unfolding. Instead, repression has followed November's demonstrations. 23 leaders of the Opposition Coalition for Unity and Democracy, or CUD, including Halu Shawal, its chairman, will be formally charged with treason today. The CUD holds all 23 of Addis Ababa's parliamentary seats, and its most junior figures have not been spared. Police came for Teshome Legese, a CUD city councillor, as he was having lunch with his family on November 1st. When they beat him with rifle butts, his wife, Etinesh Yimam, 46, became hysterical. They beat her with sticks, then one of the police shot her twice. The man who killed Mrs. Etinesh received a shouted order from another officer, "Just do it!" At that moment, he fired again, apparently, aiming at the woman's son, bent over her body. He missed and wounded one of the family's neighbors. Then two officers were fired in the air, dispersing the crowd, and the police left in a pickup, taking the dead woman's husband. Arrests were taking place across Addis Ababa. The city's jail overflowed, and prisoners were held in its compound. As that became crammed, detainees were held in the National Exhibition Center. Even that overflowed, so government officers were used as temporary prisons. That's government offices were used as temporary prisons, of course. Again, in Ethiopia, upwards of 40,000 protesters jailed in a repressive sweep by one of Tony Blair's friends, the leader of Ethiopia. Finally today, we turn to High Country News at hcn.org, their latest issue. A bullet for the bearer of bad news. This is an article written by Rocky Barker, who is the writer and author of Scorched Earth, How Fires in Yellowstone Changed America. It starts with a quote. "When they don't like the message, they are going to kill the messenger," Michelle DeHart said in November. By they, she meant the industrial and agricultural interests along the Snake and Columbia Rivers and their powerful friends in Congress. The messenger is herself and the federal agency she manages. DeHart runs the Fish Passage Center in Portland, a team of fisheries scientists who analyze the impacts of dams on salmon for the Northwest's state fish and wildlife agencies and Indian tribes. The center's findings have often challenged the views presented by federal and hydro industry scientists. Last summer, At the request of Indian tribes, DeHart wrote an analysis supporting U.S. District Judge James Redden's order that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers spill water over dams to help migrating salmon. The spill cost the Bonneville Power Administration some $74 million in lost power generation. In November, Idaho Senator Larry Craig, Republican, with the acquiescence of Northwestern Democrats, cut off the center's funding. That means that when funding runs out in the coming months, DeHart and her scientists are most likely done. Mike Tracy, a Craig spokesman, said, quote, "She took a position that supported one side of the argument, and that's advocacy," end quote. Craig's legislation, attached to a budget bill, allows Bonneville Power to fund other agencies to do the analysis currently done by the Fish Passage Center. Nonetheless, the center's demise shows that salmon fishermen, environmental groups, and Indian tribes have far less political traction than their opponents. Washington Democratic Senator Patty Murray helped Craig get the legislation passed. The rest of the Northwest delegation, three Democrats and three Republicans, let it happen. Bert Bowler, a fisheries biologist who used to work for the Idaho Department of Fish and Game and is now with the nonprofit Idaho Rivers United, said, quote, "The states of Oregon and Washington should have come to the aid of the Fish Passage Center, but they didn't, even though they're Democrats. Okay, I'm not sure why that means they should come in to their aid, but sorry for that aside. Fishery scientists say the only way to save endangered Snake River salmon and steelhead may be to breach four dams on the Snake River. In the past, the states have challenged federal assertions that transporting salmon around dams and building systems that allow fish to bypass the structures can offset the impacts. But the state's resistance has crumbled under political pressure," says Bowler. He said, quote, "The states are dysfunctional," end quote. At the same time, a recent shift in ocean currents has ended. At least for now, the optimal conditions that have increased salmon productivity in the Columbia dramatically since 1997, the growing scientific evidence that global warming threatens northwestern salmon only compounds the legal and political uncertainty. You can find more in this particular article and other related issues at High Country News, hcn.org. Again, that was written by Rocky Barker. This has been In the News for December 17th, 2005. I'm Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. I'll talk to you next time.